On this edition of WBOI's Field Notes, we'll look back on IU's historic win over Ohio State, earning them the top seed in the college football playoffs. Victoria Jacobson drops by to discuss Notre Dame's exclusion from the tournament before turning our attention to local basketball. I'll close with notes on the Comets, the Colts, and more. That's all next on Field Notes. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Zach Bernard. In just two seasons, Kurt Cignetti has taken Indiana football from the bottom of the Big Ten to the number one team in the nation. To accomplish that, Indiana had to beat then-top-ranked Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game Saturday night, and that they did, winning a thriller 13-10 to beat the Buckeyes for the first time since 1988. Cignetti, who is now 24-2 in two seasons as IU's head coach, says it was a game worthy of the top two ranked teams in the nation.
When you play a great team, they're going to make plays, you're going to make plays, and you just got to make one more than they do.
The win gives the Hoosiers a top seed and a bye in the college football playoffs. That also means they won't play until the quarterfinals on January 1st in the Rose Bowl. Cignetti says he's not worried about the Hoosiers losing focus between now and then.
We got great character kids and leadership on this team, and I have absolutely no question we'll be ready to play.
Linebacker Isaiah Jones says Saturday's victory proves Indiana is for real.
Yeah, I mean, this win, I mean, kind of shows like everybody, why not? Why would you not want to come to Indiana? I mean, for any of the doubters out there, I think this kind of, you know, was the final nail in the coffin.
The win snapped a 31-game losing streak to Ohio State and leaves the Hoosiers as the only undefeated team in the nation at 13-0. Linebacker Aiden Fisher says all the credit goes to Cignetti.
There's something about Coach Cig that it just makes you want to, you know, play your heart out for him. He does a great job getting the best out of everybody.
Meanwhile, quarterback Fernando Mendoza may have locked up the Heisman Trophy with his performance against Ohio State. The trophy, which goes to the nation's top college football player, will be awarded Saturday night.
I would love the opportunity to get the invite to New York, which would be fantastic. But I think it's really a testament to the team. And it's not a player award, it's a team award.
Mendoza shook off a brutal hit that knocked him out for a play on Indiana's first series. He then went on to throw for 222 yards and a touchdown. He said he was not going to stay down.
We've worked so hard to get to this point that no hit, no knockout hit, knockout punch could take me out of that game because, you know, it's one thing about the Indiana Hoosiers football team is whenever they hit, we hit back harder.
Indiana will play either number 8 seed Oklahoma or 9 seed Alabama in the Rose Bowl. And now I'm joined by Victoria Jacobson from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's stay on college football for a moment because I want to get your thoughts on Notre Dame's snub from the playoffs.
I've been thinking about this, and it is possible that I'm unaware of a truly outrageous decision made in determining the NCAA volleyball field in 1977 or something. I don't even know if they had the tournament that year, but I think this is one of the worst decisions that has ever been made by any selection committee ever. And the worst part is not just the decision that they made to put in Alabama, a team that has lost two of its final four games, a team that opened its season with a loss to 5-7 Florida State, a team that had -3 rushing yards in the SEC title game. Zach, you did better than the Alabama run game.
It's true.
On Saturday. So did I, and I was at Target. The worst part is that they had the audacity to go out there week after week and unveil these rankings. And each week, apparently, lie to our faces about what they value, about how they're making these decisions, about what they think of these various teams, about why they're ranking them these ways. They moved up Alabama a spot in front of Notre Dame after the final week of the regular season because Alabama beat an Auburn team with a losing record, with a 5-7 record, by a late touchdown. They struggled against a 5-7 Auburn team, and they were like, yeah, let's move them up. Why? And then the next week, after being thoroughly dismantled by Georgia, which negates by far their most impressive win of the season, but shows that they are no longer the team that beat Georgia back during the regular season, they let Alabama sit there. Why? At this point, I'm not even sure if it's safe to send Alabama to the playoff. I'm worried for the safety of Ty Simpson, their quarterback. Things did not look good in that game. Meanwhile, BYU played in the Big 12 title game, lost handily to Texas Tech, a team that they had lost to handily in the regular season. Why does BYU move down by several spots after that? And Alabama doesn't. Everybody else who has lost a conference title game, everybody else, not just this year, but in past years, has moved down in the rankings, and Alabama did not. Why? Why, after -3 rushing yards, do you think, I think that that's a good place for them? It's inexplicable. So, yes, Notre Dame got left out of the playoffs, despite being, by the eye test, most of the, not just most, all of the advanced metrics, all of the regular metrics you want to use, like wins over FBS teams, wins over Power 4 teams, Notre Dame should be in. Just by where they were in your rankings earlier this season and had done nothing but beat Syracuse 70-7, they should be in. By, if you're going to go by the AP poll, they should be in. If you're going to trust the judgment of the coaches poll, they should be in. If you're just going to trust your eyes, they should be in. But okay, that's not the only problem here. The other problem is that a BYU team with more wins than any other team that we've been talking about in this conversation got left out in favor of this mediocre Bama team. Another problem is that Miami is ranked behind Alabama, despite the fact that they had the same record in the regular season, despite the fact that Miami did not get to play in their conference title game for reasons that are deeply complicated. Therefore, Miami did not have -3 rushing yards in their conference title game. Despite the fact that Miami and Alabama both played Florida State, Alabama was embarrassed while Miami won that game. So, no, this isn't fair to Notre Dame, but it's also not fair to a lot of other teams. My question is, why on earth should we continue with this process? Why on earth should we continue to have a committee that is hopelessly conflicted because there are active athletic directors running this thing who have so many incentives to favor teams within their own conference, who have all sorts of relationships with conference commissioners who are trying to bend their ear and explain why the SEC or the Big Ten or whoever needs to have more teams in this thing? We have metrics that don't really make sense. Like, it's very important to have a certain number of wins over the top 25. Why? Why is a win over the number 23 team in the country so much more impressive than the number 26 team in the country? It's not. It's an arbitrary metric. We have systems that can be used to make this not only more fair, but also just less arbitrary, less obvious, more transparent. They're called computer rankings. They are used for all sorts of other things. We could use them here instead of wasting hotel points on people who lie to our faces.
Yeah, the thing I'm most upset about is that we were deprived of a rematch between IU and Notre Dame. I'm not saying it would have automatically happened, but there was always the potential for that, and would have been a lot of fun to run that back and do it again this year. Let's move on to the hardwood and something a bit more positive. PFW's women's team is experiencing a lot of turnover this year, but they're still off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, so if a lot of people might remember that win over Purdue, which one of the PFW players referred to as our big sisters over across state, but the PFW women are now 6-4, and they are 2-0 in conference. On December the 3rd, they beat IU Indy 74-68. Over the weekend, on this past Sunday, the Mastodons beat Wright State 68-52. As we're recording this, we're just ahead of a doubleheader for the PFW men and women that's going to be played at Memorial Coliseum on Wednesday evening. And so the women will be taking on Milwaukee.
And on the high school side of things, Homestead is living up to their expectations so far. They had an impressive win over Carroll last week.
Yes. So after that big win, I talked to Homestead coach Rod Parker, and he mentioned that after that loss to Norwell, which is obviously the defending Class 3A state champion and new sectional mate now that the Knights are up in 4A. But yeah, Coach Parker said that he was really pleased because he walked into that locker room and he didn't really have to say anything. He said that the players, especially the senior players who have so much experience, started the conversation about the things that didn't work out, the things that went wrong. And they were able to identify and maturely address the very things that would usually be his job as the coach to talk through with them. And so he said, like, that's a really, really good sign that when something goes wrong for them, they know what went wrong and they know how to talk about that amongst themselves successfully. And so since then, things have gone really, really well for the Spartans. They have now won 5 in a row since then. I was there to watch them beat Carroll 77-29 on Friday, just raining threes, moving the ball really well, totally able to shut down Carroll on defense, really make it hard to get the ball into their post player. And they held the Chargers to 2 points in the second quarter. When you do that, that's really going to help you win a lot of games. So they have now won all of their SAC games so far, all three of them, a third of the way through the conference slate, by 40 or more points. So things are going really well for them in SAC play. Last night, as we're recording this, the Spartans beat Columbia City 86-31. And that Columbia City team no longer has the star Addie Baxter. She's now over at Butler, but was still doing pretty well, was receiving votes in the IBCA poll. So to so thoroughly dismantle a really good 3A team, a team that had been 7-2 coming into that game, that's very, very impressive.
Victoria Jacobson covering the whole spectrum of local sports for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Comets split their games last weekend, but were still able to pick up a point in their overtime loss to Toledo. They've managed to stay hot since the opening puck drop, holding on to first place in the Central Division with a 14-4-2-0 record and a total of 30 points so far. A full weekend slate is ahead of them as they'll host Kansas City on Friday and Kalamazoo on Saturday. Both games start at 7:30, then they'll head up north to Kalamazoo Sunday for a 3 o'clock start to wrap things up. The Indianapolis Colts are in a far different place than they were a month ago. They've dropped their last three games and are on the bubble in an AFC where it appears anything can happen these next 4 weeks. Daniel Jones is out with an Achilles injury for the rest of the year, while Anthony Richardson and Riley Leonard nurse ailments of their own. Just tons of bad luck following this team around right now. In their search of a quarterback, 44-year-old grandfather Philip Rivers answered the call and has been signed to the practice squad. I love when the old guys come out of retirement, especially in the NFL. Rivers hasn't played a snap of pro football since 2020. Why not call Drew Brees or Tom Brady and see if they have gas in the tank? Maybe they did. There's no guarantee or even expectation that this is going to pan out in a way that gets the Colts to the playoffs, which is too bad. But I do give them credit for making this situation interesting. As of this recording, we don't know if he's game ready or if he'll even suit up for game action. It's still a possibility, and between you and I hope it happens. Let's get weird. The Pacers have a 2-game winning streak. You'll love to see that. After a rough 2-17 start to the year, things are stabilizing a little bit down there. They won each game by 10 or more points. They're still 6-18 on the year, but they're only 3.5 games away from the final play-in seed in the East and have 58 games to play. That's plenty of time for them to fully turn things around and make a push, and I hope they can. They've got the 76ers in Philly tomorrow night, then they're back home to face the Wizards, who are 3-19 on Sunday, before hosting the Knicks next Thursday. And Purdue's men's team took a tough 81-58 loss over the weekend against Iowa State, so they're no longer the number one seed in college basketball. The Boilermakers will continue, looking to recover from that loss against Marquette at home on Saturday. That's all for Field Notes this week. Field Notes comes out every Thursday. We'll see you next week. I'm Zach Bernard.
Music for Field Notes is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. You can support this podcast anytime at wboi.org/donate. You and I are listening to WBOI.